This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
Every time I find myself, I feel so lost. And every truth that I discover feels so false. And every mountain that I climb that seems so tall. It only felt that way cause the valley was so small. Excuse me while
I had this future pretty much out of my mind. But when I close my eyes I think about you every time. At this point you're pretty much out of my mind. But when I close my eyes I think about you every time.
I spend my days alone. One guy left me all alone. He's all I got. He's all I got. Headlights pointed at the dun dun. Stuck in a mosh pit, lost in the crowd. Something is missing now. I need to find the right way to your house. Headlights pointed at the dun dun. Stuck in a mosh pit, lost in the crowd.
Welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. We have a really exciting show for you guys today. We have an interview with the author John Boyne, who wrote My Brother's Name is Jessica, coming up later on. But right now, sat opposite me in the studio is the ever so beautiful, it's Mr. Phil Samba. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really great to have you here. Now, I guess I've always seen you as a pioneer, I'm going to say, for a lot of different activism. I mean, I think you do so much work in the mental health of black gay men. Mm-hmm. And you also do a lot of HIV activism as well, yep, particularly around PrEP and things like that. So do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about what it is you do? I know it's a big topic to cover.
I recently wrote a bio, so I've like the gist of it in my head. So I currently work at Terence Higgins Trust as a health improvement specialist, which is essentially working on the project to prevent and reduce HIV amongst men of color, queer men of color. I co-developed and starred in a campaign for GMFA called Me, Him, Us, which did really well in and outside of the sector, the HIV sector. I'm a social activist and a writer. I write a lot about kind of my own personal experiences and how, I guess, you know, being born and raised in London and growing up in, growing up here, but then kind of having the background of being West African and how that's had an effect on my life, and especially coming into, you know, me being gay and everything. So there's that, and there's like a bunch of other things that I probably can't remember off the top of my head.
You got a lot of fingers and a lot of pies.
Yes.
I feel like the way you talk about it, Phil, like it's such, you've done so many amazing things.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're not giving yourself enough credit for how incredible you are. I feel like you're really playing it down. I mean, you won an award last year, a Gay Times Honours.
Yes.
I was there in the audience. I was very proud. I was clapping very loudly, as loud as I could.
Okay, that's a good way, because those things kind of go into each other. So, first of all, imposter syndrome is real.
Yes, even imposter syndrome is real.
I know I do, like, a lot of incredible things. I don't know, I kind of find it weird. When Martin contacted me about that, actually, he was like, we'd like to nominate you for an award. I was like, huh?
You like me? Are you sure? Is this a mistake?
Well, mostly because no one from Gay Times was, like, following me. So I just was trying to figure out how they found out what I was doing. So that was that. And then that experience was crazy. Like, when I got on the stage, and I still have the video of it, everyone got shushed. As soon as I came on, it's like the whole room got shushed. And that alone was just weird. And then, like, everyone was, like, really listening intently on what I had to say and everything like that. And then, like, I found the whole thing really overwhelming, but just because I was so happy.
Yeah, I mean, you absolutely deserved it. And I know you say you feel like people, you know, Gay Times or whoever, don't know what you're doing, but they clearly do. I mean,
yeah.
there's eyes everywhere, and I feel like I cannot go anywhere in the gay world without hearing your name said. So, you know, you're definitely getting your name, but more importantly, the message mm-hmm. out there.
I think the other thing is that I try to use as many different things as I can to get the message out. And someone actually said to me last week that they thought that I did PR because I do so many things. But like, I'm on, you know, I would be doing discussion panels and podcasts, and I'll write my own articles, and I'll contribute to articles, and I'll be in videos, and I'll do as many different things to reach as many different people, as well as using my social media. So I think everyone believes that everything I do is my job, when they don't realize that it was just literally one project and a couple of bits here and there.
Well, I think when you're so passionate about everything that you're doing, I mm-hmm. think the kind of the lines are blurred between
yeah.
what's personal and what's your job.
That
and
is
I think
very
it's hard to kind of draw a distinction between that. And mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you do work for Terence Higgins Trust, that is your job, but I feel like your job as a whole is something a lot bigger and
yes.
larger than that.
Especially because I do a lot of stuff that come into terms with like race and sexuality as well. So there's, I feel like I'm mostly in, well, there's the health inequalities for men of color in general, so mental health and sexual health especially, but then there's also like race and sexuality issues, like racism in the LGBT community here, for example, and there's other things that I talk about that kind of coincide that.
Well, I think, I mean, we did an episode recently for LGBT History Month. We did an episode on LGBT people of color. And I feel like you were somebody I wanted on that episode.
I really wanted to do that, but that month was crazy. This is why
busy.
It's taken so long.
It was busy. But I mean, I'm glad to have you here, because there's so much on that I mm-hmm. want to discuss. And I feel like that kind of intersection between gay men and black men is something that we don't talk about enough. And I think
yep.
there are more issues there than we perhaps realize.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, racism is rife within our community, but there's also a refusal to accept that. And we kind of see it rear its head time and time again. I mean, when we saw the Manchester Pride, including the I don't know, what was that flag called, with the additional colours? Does it have a name?
I can't remember what it's called, but that haunted me for a long time.
It was a mess, and it brought all these like racist thoughts out into the mainstream, and suddenly we were seeing it everywhere.
I don't think those thoughts were ever not hidden, but those people always had those beliefs before. It's
yeah.
just the flag allowed them to get riled up about it or to express how they thought about it. But I got thrown under the bus when it came to that anyway.
What? How?
So I saw someone post it on the Instagram story, and I just thought, okay, white gay men are losing their shit because there's literally two flags in a rainbow that
yeah.
they clearly never gave a fuck about before. So I just posted it to my story, and I thought, like, look at this. Like, white gay men are proper losing it. This is funny. And then, like, it just turned into like a nightmare. Basically, then I fell out with someone that I've known since 2012 because he was saying basically, we're all just gay now, so why don't you just get on with it? But structural racism doesn't allow that, so okay. But there was that, and then who else? I had a lot of conversations where a lot of people were telling me that I was being aggressive, and I was like, I'm really not aggressive in the slightest.
I would never describe you as aggressive, Phil. Exactly. You're a big cuddly giant.
Exactly, but that's what irritates me is because a lot of people, before they meet me anyway, they kind of associate me with the stereotypes of a young, tall, black man. Mm. And I think I've been fighting against it since I was about 14. So that's why when people try to say I'm aggressive or whatever, I'm like, no, you don't have an argument or you don't have a point. Like, I was very valid in what I was saying, and they didn't have an argument, and they couldn't back me up. And I was saying, you need to worry about how you're coming across. And I'm not coming across anything. Yeah. Like, and then I foolishly contributed to an article for BBC.
Okay. But you say foolishly. I mean, it's still a good thing to do.
No, because they did that whole for and against thing.
Right, okay.
And the person that wrote it, I'm not going to say any names. The person that wrote it, he got opinions from white cis gay men who wanted to know what they thought, and then people were tracking me down on Facebook, my Twitter. I can't remember I think it's just Facebook and Twitter. They were actually searching for me to tell me what they thought about it, and then I'll tell them about themselves, and not in a rude way. I'll just say, okay, so this is happening in Russia. Shouldn't we concentrate on that? Or I'd be like, structural racism is this. White fragility is this, and then they wouldn't respond, and I was just like, so why all this energy? And I think that a lot of it comes down to a lot of white men in general, not just white gay men, but they don't like the idea of people of color being equivalent to them.
Yeah,
that's what they're scared of.
And I think this isn't a smaller minority of people as we might think as mm-hmm. well. I think, you know, if people don't know about these issues, they may be thinking, you know, that's just a small handful of people.
Yes.
It's not. It's an incredibly loud number of people. And sometimes I feel like it even like becomes the majority of people. There's this bizarre slant where, like you said, it's like there's this refusal to accept black gay men or just black LGBT plus people into mm-hmm. our community, and I don't know why that is.
I think a lot of it has to do with stereotypes.
Yeah.
For example, I don't feel like I fit into any of my stereotypes. I don't think I'm stereotypically a black male or what everyone perceives to be this aggressive thug male. I may dress like that if that's what they think, but I'm not like that.
I mean, you're dressed in pink today.
So. I know, but I'm in a hoodie, so that's still right. Intimidating. And sure. I'm 6'5", so there's that as well. Gosh. But like, there's the weird dress, and then there's also, I guess, I don't feel like I'm stereotypically gay. I don't think I fall into a lot of categories that a lot of people think. Yeah. And I think part of why I've been successful is because I've just kind of charging forward, saying I can be whoever the fuck I want, and so can you. And I think that's what's helping a lot of people. A lot of the conversations that I have with a lot of people tend to be around coming out when it's not to do with sexual health or mental health.
I think one thing that I've always admired in your work is that you always allow yourself to be vulnerable. Mm. You know, you never do take, like you're saying, you never do take this aggressive stance, and you so often put, you know, your heart and your emotions on the line, and mm-hmm. you talk from a place of vulnerability. And I know that, you know, you've had your own issues and things with mental health in the past. And I think the fact that you're able to draw on those experiences and honestly put yourself out there, I think that's why people do find you relatable. Mm-hmm. And I think it breaks my heart a little bit, but that's also the reason so many people try to jump on you and attack you.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know. I just feel like I just have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And like I reposted a video yesterday from something I did for GMFA for a project they're working on. And someone messaged me and said, you know, where did you get your therapy? And then I told him where I was doing it at work at the time. And I was saying, you know, you can get on the NHS, but it takes ages. And then like, he was like, I'm worried about some of the stuff that might come up. And I was like, we all have stuff to deal with. And like, dealing with it is better than just letting it sit there and get worse. And it's just stuff like that. If I can help one person, then I feel like I'm doing a great job.
Absolutely. Can we talk about PrEP as well very quickly? Because I'm very passionate about PrEP, and I know that it's one of the main things that you talk about. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's still not enough knowledge around it.
Yes.
Give me your spiel on PrEP. You know, for anyone listening, for any gay man listening who doesn't know about PrEP or what it is or why it's important.
Okay.
Give it to me.
There's so much.
I know, it's a big undertaking.
So the shortest version I can think of, PrEP is a HIV prevention drug which you take before and after sex that can prevent you from getting HIV if you take it like as instructed. And basically, the issues we have in England at the moment is that we don't have access in England like we do in, let's say, Scotland or in Northern Ireland. And Wales has a project too. We have the trial where people can access it through the trial, but the spaces for men who have sex with men are all filled up. That you can buy it online from iwantprepnow.co.uk, but I think the main issue that a lot of people have is that they don't know a lot of people that are on it. Mm-hmm. So because they don't know a lot of people on it, then they won't take it themselves because they don't have that personal connection to someone that is using it.
Sure.
There's also some research came out recently which said that a lot of men don't have the capacity to have conversations about condomless sex amongst their friends. So that's another issue. And I take PrEP myself and I talk about it nonstop.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's not enough black gay men that are comfortable with themselves or comfortable enough to talk about it or feel like they'll be judged. So, yeah.
I think there is a lot of stigma around HIV, you know, within the gay community, but mm-hmm. also within the black community
as
well.
It's a lot worse,
so
yeah.
There's no, it doesn't surprise me that there is that stigma there. And I think mm-hmm. the fact that you're putting yourself out there and saying, hey guys, I take PrEP, I'm proud to take PrEP. And, you know, maybe it's an option for you as well.
Yeah.
I think that's an amazing thing. So, you know, thank you for all you're doing there.
Thank you. I think it's incredible how it's managed to bring HIV rates down.
Yeah.
Like the first time.
So quickly ever. As well.
Yes.
You know?
And this is why I think initially when I first got involved with the sector, I always thought I knew about PrEP from like maybe 2015. I didn't know how to access it or where to get it. I don't think we even could get it at the time until Greg did his thing. But like I always just thought if it works, why don't we have it?
Yeah.
Like that's why I do what I do with PrEP.
I think that, I mean, we could sit here for hours and talk about it, but I think, you know, the politics behind, you know, why we couldn't have it and everything, there was so much, I think, homophobia at times.
I was about to say that myself.
And it was a mess. Unfortunately, we don't have time to pick all that apart because, you know, we'd be here forever. You also do some fun things, Phil. You know, this is all very serious. I think you probably know where I'm going with this.
Yes.
You were in a music video recently.
Oh, yes. Yes,
tell us about this.
Well, so I have to start off with the album cover, actually, don't I?
Yes, yeah. The album cover's funny, actually, because I remember we used to work together mm-hmm. at Terence Higgins Trust, and I remember you coming in one day and asking if you could have the day off yeah. to go and do this album cover, and you were like, oh, no, it's just for a friend. You know, it's just this little artist. You won't have heard of him. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal.
I didn't say that.
You played it off that way.
I think maybe to Cham, because Cham yeah. wouldn't have heard of it.
so
okay,
who is it?
Okay, so how did this happen? I met Emenike at a house party because we had at the time mutual friends, and he came to the house party, and we met again through the same group of friends, and then I was coming home one day, and then he was like, he DM'd me on Twitter, and he was like, what's your number? I need to speak to you about something. And I was just freaking, I don't know why, but I just started panicking.
Yeah.
And then like he messaged me and he goes, we had this really cool idea for what I wanted to do for my album cover, but now I'm thinking I want to have like sort of, I want to do something on black masculinity and femininity, and I want to balance like, I don't know, having someone, me being feminine and you being masculine and put it on the cover and do something. And I was just like, yes, whatever it is, yes.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll speak to work, I'll get off, I'll call in sick if I have to, I don't know, but I wanted to do it. And then we did that quite early, actually. We did that in February last year, and the album didn't drop until September. So I think
it's a big wait.
Yes, the cover art didn't come out for ages, but I saw it, I had a preview of it like long before it came out, so I was just waiting for it. And then
it's a beautiful cover, by the way.
It is so good. It's so good. It's honestly, the picture is just incredible. I wasn't expecting it to be like that at all. And then when the album dropped, he invited me to his album launch party. And then before I'd heard the album, because he had the party on the Thursday going into Friday when the album came out on the Friday. And then I remember the track list and he said, like, I really need to do a music video for Girlfriend. And I was just like, what is that? I need to hear that song. Like, and then I remember as I was playing the album, Girlfriend was the song that I replayed like 6 times before I could play the rest of the album. And I said to him, if you need anyone, I'm here. I'll do it. Whatever. And then, like, I think a couple months passed and then he messaged me and he's like, actually, I'd like to have you for it. And I was like, done. We filmed that just after Christmas. And then it came out in February. And that music video is incredible because it's so messy.
It's such a good video. I mean, you play the guy who's cheating on his girlfriend.
Yes,
with
that guy is trash.
Emenike, essentially. Well, I think you can see where this is going. our first song for today's show is going to be... Why? It's not here. Why? I've lost it. Okay, I'll just swap it in. Uh-oh. Oh, no. Callum, this is why I need to be prepared. my producer is on her way to help me. But yeah, it is such a great song, such a great music video. And yes, I have it now. So here we go. This is Girlfriend by Emenike.
If your girlfriend knew about me and you, about what we do, tell me what would she do? Yeah, if you told the truth and said the word, someone like her just isn't right for you. I'm a little secret nobody's supposed to know. You wanna keep this on the, keep this on the low. I'm the reason she's wondering why you're never home, why you're never home. But imagine if she knew you were sick to me and acting irresponsibly while she's humbling her recipes. You've been in my bed constantly, neither you or your story straight. Such a shame for a second to put yourself in her place. If your girlfriend knew about me and you, about what we do, tell me what would she do? Yeah, if you told the truth and said the word, someone like her just isn't right for you. Cause you're
controversial.
I wish you would come out. I only see you when it's dark out. Every time, hey, can I come now? It's too late, yeah. I've never been to your house. That's why you always come round. Just so I'm scared she'll find out. Cause if she knew that you wear my jeans, say my name when you fall asleep. It's your 5th anniversary. Even now, my I constantly need that you or your story straight. Such a shame. For a second, put yourself in a about me and you, about what we do, tell me what would she do? Yeah, if you told the truth and said the word, someone like her just isn't right for you. If you knew about me and you, about what we do, tell me what would she do? Yeah, if you told the truth and said the word, someone like her just isn't right for you.
Just isn't right for you.
Are you ready for a game, Phil?
Yes.
So this is one of my personal favourite games. This is a game called Porn or Not Porn. So I have, I can tell you like this already. In front of me, I have 5 sound bites. Some of these have been taken from porn, and some of them have been taken not from porn. And we together have to figure out which is which.
Okay. Are they taken from gay porn?
Most likely. Maybe not.
Okay.
But often they are taken from gay porn. But we do a different theme every week. And I mean, this is a tenuous theme. I feel like my producers were struggling with this. This is very tenuous indeed. Because your surname is Samba, we've gone for a dance theme this week. So these have either been taken from porn or some kind of dance. It's harder than you think. Okay. I do not have the answers in front of me, so we are a team. Mm-hmm. Do you want to dive right in and do this?
Yeah.
Okay. Our first soundbite is...
Now we're going to jelly roll to this jelly roll.
I did not understand a word of that.
What?
Did you get any of that? Let's hear it again.
Now we're going to jelly roll to this jelly roll.
Now we're going to jelly roll to this jelly roll?
See, that could be either. That could be sex or dancing.
Yeah, I think I'm just puzzled. Who talks like that? I'm going again.
Now we're going to jelly roll to this jelly roll.
Now we're going to jelly roll to this jelly roll. Nobody speaks like that.
No, but he sounds kind of hot, so that's making me want to think porn.
He sounds kind of hot.
But the jelly roll's making me think that it's dancing. So I'm really... I don't know. You pick.
What would a jelly roll be in sex?
That is also true. I don't know. Some people get up to some crazy things.
I'm kind of leaning towards dance because I just don't know what that would be in the context of a porno.
Okay.
But you want to say porn because he sounds hot.
Yeah. Because he might be a hot porn star.
Yeah, I like the logic there.
See, there's some theory in that.
So we're torn here. Which way are we going to go?
Let's go with dance.
Yeah? Okay, we are saying not porn. And the answer is not porn.
Oh, see.
This is YouTuber Buff Carell, never heard of him, introduces his very bad vocal cover of Pumped Up Kicks along with his signature bad dance moves. Lovely. Should we do the next one?
Sure.
Okay, here we go.
See, I could do a whole spin on the ground.
Definitely porn.
Yeah, I feel like the bad sound quality.
She has a bit of a, Cock Destroyer's... to her voice.
She does have a little bit of a cock destroyer to her voice.
See, I could do a whole spin on the ground.
I feel like there's this there is a thing that porn actresses do where they kind of put this little, I don't even know what it is, but there's a little lilt in their voice.
I was going to do the impression, but I'm not going to do
No, please do.
No, I can't.
Please
I can't,
do. No, what can't. What are we, Phil?
Please.
What are we, Phil?
Fucking cock destroyers, aren't we, babe?
That was no. That was beautiful. I'm going to soundbite that. I'm going to take that. That's going to be my ringtone from now on.
Then you get a text.
Let's hear her again.
See, I could do a whole spin on the ground.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is porn.
Because that's before sex.
Yes.
That's look what I can do. And then seconds later, that's what she'll be
doing. So this is in the build-up.
Yes.
I completely agree with you. We are saying porn. That this is porn. And the answer is porn.
Sweet.
A female dancer wearing bright red disco pants is trapped in a ring gag. Is a ring gag where it holds your mouth open?
I have no idea.
Or is it... I think it's one of that like holds your mouth wide open.
Okay.
You're looking at me like sweet innocent Phil. I've never heard of any of these things.
I had a flashback to something and I don't want to say it.
I'm very intrigued. I won't push you.
Okay. Basically, my friend had something similar to that.
Okay.
It had like, there was like a vagina where the mouth should be.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's for like a face.
No, but it was like quite long, so I was like, that's not gonna work. So I don't know.
Wow, I kind of want to play with that. That sounds fun.
I will get a picture.
Thank you. Should we do our next one?
Sure.
Are you straight?
No.
Great.
Definitely porn.
That has to be porn. In what? How could that ever be dance?
Because the gay porn is really, really poorly acted. That's why that video with Emma Stone did so well.
Which video with Emma Stone?
Oh, you need to watch it. There's an SNL video where she... Okay. I don't want to ruin it for you.
Set this up. You have to tell me now.
Okay, basically... No, I can't because it ruins the video. You have to just watch it.
So it's Emma Stone pretending to be a porn actress.
No, it's Emma Stone playing the role of the wife in the porno.
Okay.
That's the short version.
Right, okay. And it's SNL.
Yes, it's hilarious.
I will look that up and I recommend our lovely listeners do as well. So what are we saying for this one? Were we saying porn?
Are you straight?
No.
That has to be porn, doesn't it?
Yeah, because that no was like, he was definitely gay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think porn. Yeah, we are saying porn. This is not porn.
Is it not?
This is taken from a video called Who's the Best Dancer, where a panel of young people firstly have to make assumptions about the dancer in front of them and then rate their dancing out of 5.
That sounds really horrible.
That does sound like that's a very judgmental game. I would not want to play that.
Where's the benefits?
Well, we got that one wrong, but we're 2 out of 3. Okay. Let's do the next one.
Sometimes it's hard to talk to.
To talk to?
Sometimes it's hard to talk to.
Sometimes he's hard to talk to? Is that what he's saying?
Sometimes it's hard to talk to.
I think so. Sometimes he's hard to talk to.
I think that could be either.
Again, this is like some really bad porn acting or who knows?
I want to say not porn. Because it doesn't feel like if you listen to it, it doesn't actually sound like bad acting. It sounds really realistic.
Sometimes it's hard to talk to.
It just sounds like someone chatting, doesn't it? Yeah, you're right. It doesn't sound sexy either. Yeah. This isn't somebody trying to get me.
He didn't do the Cock Destroyer's voice.
He didn't do the Cock Destroyer's voice. Do you want to do it again, Phil? I think we are saying that this is not porn. And the answer is not porn.
Sweet.
This is taken from a scene from Dirty Dancing. One of Patrick Swayze's friends warns Baby about the type of teacher he is.
Okay.
I do not remember that, but
I've
sure.
I've never seen it, you know.
You've never seen
I'm
it?
I'm really bad with films, but I don't want to say all of this. You could give me a list of like 50 films that everyone has seen.
Gladiator.
I've never seen it.
Titanic.
I've seen that.
Okay, good. Because we're about to have a fight. All right, let's do our last one.
Okay.
How did this one go?
See, he has a voice that could very easily be in porn, but he could also be like a sexy dance teacher as well, you know?
Wait, play it again.
How did this one go?
I think it's dance. Because you're not going to ask that question during sex.
You might do.
How does this one go? You'd know how it goes.
Unless it's like they're doing like a challenge where they have to do all these like weird positions. It's like, oh, so how does this one go? You know?
No, because it's always like poor storyline. Yeah. That. And then sex.
So you think not porn?
Yes.
I'm going to agree with you. Yeah, we are saying that this is not porn. This is indeed not porn. This is taken from a tour video from the hunky dance troupe, the Dream Boys. Someone is asking the group how their show went the previous night. I've seen the Dream Boys.
That's practically porn, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that one's like in the middle. I've seen the Dream Boys, and it wasn't for me.
Wasn't it?
It was very kind of vanilla stripping, mm-hmm. And it was very heteronormative as well.
Is that possible?
Well, I mean, like, it was a room full of women cheering at, like, 5 guys who were, like... And it was just... The way the whole thing was set up was that they were all these, like, really masculine...
I see.
You know? And I would have liked a little bit of... Maybe a little twink or something. just to mix things up a bit, you know? That would have been nice. So, yeah, the Dream Boys, not one I would recommend. We got 4 out of 5, right, Phil?
Okay, that's not too bad.
You know, that I think that's pretty good. So, well done, us. We are going to have a little bit of music now, and then we're going to jump straight into our interview with John Boyne. So, this is Too Cool by Emily Burns.
Say I made a mistake, turned up 40 minutes late, just to make you angry, but you didn't care, you never care. Then I hid your car keys, made you miss the party, you thought it was funny, you didn't care, you never care. You're so sweet like peach iced tea, it kind of makes me. You to scream and then hang up on me. Call up all your friends, go tell them everybody. Say I did you wrong and I'm being cruel. Swear you'll turn around and find somebody new. I need you to say you don't wanna see me. Loving you is harder when you make it easy. Say I did you wrong and I'm being cruel. Honey, at the moment you're a little too cool. Last night I was wasted. Today I woke up ugly. But you say I look pretty. You're really nice, you're way too nice. Then I said the wrong name. And you said, babe, it's okay. I'm trying really hard here. But you're really nice, you're way too nice. You're so sweet, like 12 ice creams. It kinda makes me sick. So I need you to scream and then
hang up on me. Call up all your friends, go tell them everybody. Say I did you wrong and I'm being cruel. Swear you'll turn around and find somebody new. I need you to say you don't wanna see me. Loving you is harder when you make it easy. Say I did you wrong and I'm being cruel. Honey, at the moment you're a little too all your friends, go telling everybody. Say I did you wrong and I'm being cruel. Swear you'll turn around and find somebody new. I need you to say you don't wanna see me. Loving you is harder when you make it easy. Say I did you wrong and I'm being cruel. Honey, at the moment you're a little too
cool.
So I am now joined by the lovely John Boyne as part of my queer book club, and we're going to be discussing his new book, My Brother's Name is Jessica. So, John, it's a pleasure to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for inviting me on.
Of course. So tell me a little bit. I've almost finished reading the book. I'm about 20 pages away from the end, so I'm very excited to see the climax, I guess. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the book?
Yeah, it's narrated by a 13-year-old boy, Sam, who has always idolized his older brother, who has been like a great older brother, an inspiration to him, best footballer in school. And the parents are quite absent. They're very busy with their political careers. And at the end of the first chapter, his sibling comes downstairs and says he doesn't think he's his brother at all. He believes he's his sister. So the story is really about how Sam, over the course of a summer, explores this subject of transgender and comes to support his sister from a point where at the start he's very embarrassed by it, he's confused by it, he does a lot of things which are not kind. But it's really about how he comes to understand that Jessica is the same person she's always been, the same loving, kind, supportive inspiration. She just has a new name, a new identity, a new body. So it's really about empathy and understanding, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's really quite special in the way that it handles it, because it is from Sam's point of view, and you kind of get this childlike understanding. And he, like you said, there are moments where he's almost quite nasty and quite mean, but he's not meaning to be. He keeps continually saying throughout the book, you know, that's you're my brother Jason. And he almost doesn't want to accept that it's actually his sister, Jessica.
Well, he's quite selfish, really.
Yeah.
Because he's thinking about himself more than he's thinking about her. He's 13 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I guess we're like in that. He doesn't want the status quo to be upset. He likes things exactly as they are. And, you know, he just doesn't understand what's going on at all. I did think it was important that I used his point of view, though, rather than Jessica's, because I don't have that personal experience of being transgender. And I thought that's probably a place for a transgender writer to write about.
Yeah.
But I do know what it's like to just not really know too much about a subject and to approach it and try to learn about it, try to educate myself. And in the books I've written for young people, this is the sixth, I've often chosen a topic where you have a kind of an innocent, naive boy where the events are kind of playing out before him and he's asking all the stupid questions and trying to understand it. And yeah, at times doing the wrong thing, but really going on a journey where by the end, he's grown up, you know. Yeah. He's like, this is not about me, actually. My brother, as was, has always looked out for me. Now it's time for me to look after my sister.
I think it's really important. It's not something that I've actually seen or read before. I've never kind of seen this perspective where there is this high level of empathy for the person that doesn't understand. And it's not just Sam either. It's the parents who I think as well can be quite mean spirited at times. But it is fair, I think. You know, it's when they're saying these unpleasant things, it's not easy to read, and at times it's almost harrowing, and it reminds you that transgender people have to go through those things.
Yeah,
but you actually do feel that from the parents. You do feel their kind
of point of view. I really would like would be if young people who are reading this book felt exactly what you're saying, if they felt, you know, if they themselves started from a position of maybe not feeling as generous feelings towards trans people as they should, if they read it and they see some of the things that Sam says and some of the things that he does, and that they go, well, hang on, I mean, that's just cruel, that's mean, why do that? And make them challenge their own prejudices or you know, the things that they don't understand about the subject.
Yeah, and I think it does that in very subtle ways as well. Like, I think it's lovely that Jessica or Jason is a footballer, and you know, the captain, is it captain?
Captain of the football team.
Yeah, and the best football player in school. And it's, you know, it's not something that you expect. And then there's also the fact that, you know, there's a lot of talk about sexuality as well, and like the assumption that sexuality and gender go hand in hand, but you know, Jessica is, you know, she still wants to date girls, and
yes, and even for her, that's confusing, because you know, the first thing sometimes people think about transgender people, well, are you gay then? And of course, it's not necessarily connected in a complete way. And for Jessica, who's 17 and is sexually interested in girls, but says from her standpoint of when she was originally in the identity of a boy, saying, well, no, I'm not gay. And then Sam is saying, but if you think you're a girl and you're attracted to girls, doesn't that make you gay? And that leaves Jessica kind of like, I don't know, I'm 17.
Yeah.
I'm literally trying to figure this out myself. I don't know what's going, you know, I'm learning about this myself. I want to speak to people. I want to go. I know that I am a girl. I want to pursue this identity and take it on. But outside of that, look, I'm only figuring it out as I go along as well.
Yeah, I love that conversation. It's actually one of my favourite parts of the book. Yeah, it's really special. There's another moment as well when Jessica's first talking about realising that she was a girl for the first time, and she's talking about growing up, and I don't want to give too much away, but just talking about, you know, feeling like she belonged in a different bathroom from a very, very young age, from the age of, I think, three years old. And that really hit me. You know, I feel like I have a lot of trans friends. I feel like I'm very educated on transgender issues. And yet, for the first time, I was hearing a trans person, whether, you know, they're fictional, but even still, it still carried the same weight.
Well, you know, it's not fictional, because I took that story from a trans friend of mine, almost word for word. And she told me that when she had been a three-year-old boy, as such, that it was this was an experience that she had. And just didn't want to use, didn't feel comfortable using the boys' toilets, you know, and felt she should be with the girls. And this is at three, when you don't know anything about anything. You know, our first memories generally aren't even too close to, you know, they're around four maybe. But she remembered this. So it was in a subconscious, it was in the brain already. Mm. And last night I was doing an event which was moderated by a transgender woman who was also saying about sort of being three and knowing then, just knowing that certain things that you sort of traditionally do with boys was not the place for her, that she felt awkward and uncomfortable then. So that does just show that it's there from birth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they have to, you know, find that courage to accept it. But everybody else has to also accept it and say, right, well, look, you are who you are. There you are. Who cares?
I think it's a really important point to make, you know, especially right now with all the conversations around, you know, LGBT plus education in schools, and people saying that, you know, it's not appropriate to be teaching kids around sexuality and gender. But, you know, that shows
but,
that
but
it is.
But you see, what we should be teaching people about is empathy and understanding and support. You know, gay people, transgender people, people who have any kind of, you know, one of my favourite authors is John Irving, and he always uses a term, because he writes about characters like that often, and he uses the term when you're growing up feeling like a sexual misfit. And people who feel that way and are going through that way, they need their friends, they need support. And teaching empathy is only a good thing if you don't talk about it. If it turns it into a taboo, it turns it into something, something you don't talk about is something dirty, is something that shouldn't be talked about, it's something dark. So I think we should be teaching children about this. It's not like you're saying you then have to be this. You know, you do a science class, doesn't mean you have to be a scientist. You know, it's just about teaching children to be kind, to be understanding. That said, I think children today, young people today, are completely different than when I was that age. Children and teenagers, kids I know, say through my nephews and nieces and so on, would be horrified at the idea of anybody being prejudiced against anybody for a sexual reason, for a gender identity, for being gay. It would be like, you know, making a racist comment or something. Mm. They would be out of their group in a second. And if anything, I think they seem to encourage people to be open and to experiment and to find out who they are and to live their most authentic life. And I think that's really, really encouraging. I think it's only the older people who really have the problem. So looking towards the future, I think there's a lot of hope actually on the horizon.
Mm. What was it that kind of inspired you then to, because I guess there is a lot of transphobia in the book, and it does come from fellow classmates, etc., and it is set in the modern day.
Yeah.
So what made you kind of decide to do that? Was it to just kind of really try to make the reader feel that empathy for the character, or was there something else behind that?
Well, it's a combination. One, to feel the empathy, but also because there is natural, for all I say, you know, that, you know, kids are very good today in general, there's always going to be that bully.
Yes.
There's always going to be that person who actually themselves is feeling insecure about something and is looking for who can I focus attention on to keep it off me and bully them. And, you know, there's always going to be that kid in school. So it would be silly to write a book like this and pretend that there is not that out there. You know, if I'd written a book, say, where Jessica comes out and everybody says, oh, that's wonderful, great.
It's,
you know,
unrealistic.
Enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, well, what am I supposed to do for the next 200 pages? As a scholar? You know,
it's not a very good book.
Yeah, and there's got to be some realism to it. And also, as we know, look, having trans friends, it's not like that anyway. People are, your loved ones are going to be worried for you. They're going to be concerned for you. They're going to, in all honesty, most of the time, they're going to wish this wasn't happening.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want somebody you love to go through what is obviously going to be a very traumatic experience. And I think today, you know, in 2019, for gay people, it's not that big a deal anymore. Nobody really cares about people being gay. It's just not an issue. But trans people have not quite got that far yet in the culture. And people are more likely to maybe do a double take on somebody on the street, make a cruel comment in the nighttime in a club or something. There is always the potential for violence against trans people. Mm. Particularly, I think, you know, if you get a bunch of drunken guys and one of them might be hitting on a trans woman without realizing that they're a trans woman, there is always that issue of like sexual humiliation in front of friends that young guys can have, and it can turn into violence with beer. So it's one of the things I think, it's one of the things that makes trans people very brave, I think, that you're living a life that is difficult and anything can happen at times. But the more we educate people on it, I guess, the more people will stop that cycle of violence. But you've got to have that in the book, though. It would be unrealistic not to have it there.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, I do think it's quite refreshing that, I don't want to say who this is, but one of the, I think the character you would least expect to be accepting of Jessica, the first person who correctly uses her pronouns in the book, comes at a surprise. And I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to say who that is, but I was really happy to see that, because it's going against the stereotypes and, subverting things.
Well, people will surprise you. You know, the person who you think might be prejudiced in some way is often completely not. And the person who you think is like a tree-hugging, pinko, lefto, commie, you know, liberal, can sometimes turn on you for the strangest thing. You know, it can be actually quite conservative in some things. We're all complicated and surprising people, I think. You know, people have a way of surprising.
I think it's interesting as well that the family itself is not, I think, sometimes when we see stories about LGBT plus people and them struggling with their families, it's often rooted in like a working class environment. You know, you have your working class father who's going to react negatively to their son coming out as gay. But we don't see that in the book. We see this very upper class family who are involved in politics. And I mean, it depends where you fall on the political spectrum. But I guess that's not what you would expect. You know, if I thought somebody was going to be homophobic or transphobic, maybe wrongly, I might be looking at a different kind of side of the class divide. So I like that it really shows that.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, these things, they hit people no matter where you are in your financial status and your social status and your colour, your religion. It's very random. And with the parents in the book, what they do, of course, is their cruelty is shown by the fact that they bury their heads in the sand, really. They're more concerned about the mother's political career.
Yeah.
And what can we do? You know, they even sort of like think, well, how will this play, basically? How will this play to the voters?
Yeah.
And they have reached a point in their lives where they have forgotten that their primary job is the care of their children.
Yeah.
And that is something that they, throughout the book, have to go on a, you know, a journey about as well, and come out the other side of that and realize, actually, what does it matter if you become, you know, the most powerful person in the country if you've lost one of your kids? I mean,
absolutely, absolutely.
I wanted to challenge young readers, certainly. I wanted to encourage them to be empathetic, but I also wanted to tell a good story. You know, that is like the primary job of the novelist.
And it is a great story. Like I said, I've not finished it yet. I have about 20 pages to go, so I'm excited to run out of here and finish. But I've thoroughly enjoyed reading it. And it really, I felt like I was learning myself. You know, I mentioned that I feel like I'm very educated on LGBT plus issues, but even reading this, I felt like I was taking away something. And
well,
you know,
I felt
it was
as I was writing
empathy.
It, you know, I mean, I tried to find out things. I tried to educate myself on it. But in the great scheme of things, you know, I don't know how much out of 100% I really still know. And I mean, even learning through the experience of talking about the book now and hearing people talk about it, it's an ongoing education, isn't it? And
absolutely.
All you can do is try to keep your mind open to every piece of information that comes your way and listening to
it. Well, I hope a lot of people read it. I hope it's not just LGBT plus people that pick up this book. I hope everyone picks up this book, because I think we can learn a lot from it. Where can people get it? All good bookstores?
All good bookstores, all online. It's available from today as we're talking. And yeah, you can get it anywhere, really.
Amazing. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting to you, John. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
So that was a lovely interview with the lovely John Boyne there, talking about his book, My Brother's Name is Jessica. Now, Phil, I know you haven't read this book. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm assuming you haven't. But there's been a little bit of controversy since I did sit down and talk with John. There's been a little bit of controversy around this book online. And I think it's the brunt of it is kind of coming from that, you know, the book does have transphobic characters and it does kind of explore transphobic themes, but it kind of does that in order to, you know, I guess show the reality of the experience of some trans people. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's an interesting one, because I think it's really important that we are able to share those stories.
Yeah.
And I, for one, don't want those to be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's a tricky one. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I know you don't know about the controversy, so it's difficult for you to comment.
Well, I get the gist, but it does sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's so many different films, TV shows, books, like so many different things where there's characters that are racist, homophobic, transphobic, etc., etc. So why, in this case, is it such a huge issue?
Mm, yeah.
Was the author themselves trans?
He wasn't, and I would say that, you know, that is one thing where, you know, I think there are some people saying out there, you know, why wasn't this opportunity given to a trans author? And I actually agree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that we do need to be making sure that we are raising up trans voices and giving them the opportunity to tell their stories directly. And I actually completely back that. But at the same time, if somebody from outside of that community wants to also write a story about that, and they're doing it for the right reasons,
yeah,
and they're doing it to, you know, bring light to it, then I think that's an important thing as well.
I agree. I feel like there needs to be a lot more stories and a lot more books and a lot more things for trans people,
yeah,
and about trans people. And if a guy that is cis and that wants to do some stories on trans people or their experience or things that he may have learned or things that he may know from people he knows, I don't see the issue with that. I don't see that as transphobic either.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I would love to talk about that all day, Phil, but we're coming up to the end of the show. So I want to talk a little bit more about the work. I know you've got some work coming up with the Me, Him, Us campaign.
Yes.
You've done some amazing things there already.
Mm-hmm.
I think I remember seeing posters and things like all over London. That,
yes,
that was your work, right?
Yeah. Well,
you were in some of it as well, I think.
I was like the main character in it.
Yeah,
but I'm not this time.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what it is that you.
Okay, so Me, Him, Us was a campaign that I did for GMFA to motivate more black gay men or black men in general to get tested for STDs and HIV. It kind of showed me and another gay man kind of being a bit intimate, and it was really sweet. And I think it did really well in and out of the HIV and sexual health sector and with the communities.
So it's people just responded well to it because it's representation?
The representation was really powerful, and that's what the first one was about. We're currently doing, the second one is launching on the next Monday, the next bank holiday, and it's going to be a lot bigger. There's a lot more people in it, and it's going to be huge.
Amazing. Can you? I feel like there's things you can't tell me about it.
No, it's not like that. With the first one, it was kind of like, that was sort of like a launch pad for me. But like with this one, I would like to kind of kickstart a lot of other people within HIV and sexual health, or at least trying to bridge the gap a bit.
And do you think there's a reluctance for people to talk about these things? Do you think campaigns like this are broadening that conversation?
Definitely. I remember when someone messaged me on Twitter once, and he said, I really wanted to start PrEP, but I was really embarrassed to go to the clinic.
Really?
He said, I saw Me, Him, Us, and that gave me the motivation to do it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's what I did.
It's brilliant when you can see the direct actions taken from your work. That is amazing. I think there are so many, you know, I talk to people all the time, and gay men who I would have thought were very educated on issues around sexual health and things, and I will mention PrEP or PEP even, and they have no idea that's even a thing.
Well, a lot from the research that I mentioned earlier, there's something that came up with a lot of queer men kind of teach themselves about sexual health, and that's how they teach other people. So I think it's really important for us as gay men, as bi men, to learn about sexual health and what's available, so we can pass that on to our friends and they can pass it on.
Absolutely. Word of mouth is how we get the message out there.
Exactly.
And you get to research sex, which is a, which is a great and a fun thing to research.
Yes.
Phil, if people want to, I guess, see more of your work, see all the things you're doing, I know you've got some amazing things coming up in the future that you can't even tell me about, but if people want to follow you and your journey and all the amazing things you're doing, how can people do that?
Okay, so I hate Facebook.
Me too.
You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram on IdiosyncraticXL.
That's very hard to spell, I imagine.
Yes. Okay, there's people are listening, so should I spell it out?
They will be able to find it online, and we'll make sure
Callum
it's available.
Callum will put out a link. It's fine.
Yeah, if you go on to my Insta story right now, your beautiful face is there, so they can tap through to you. Well, you have been an amazing guest.
Thank you for having me.
It's been lovely to have you here. And I'm going to play you out with some new music from the lovely, lovely Miss Benny. This is Rendezvous.
I know it's a dangerous game, but I know what I like, boy, I got my own reasons. So tell me, do you wanna play? And I got all the magic words, all your favorite lies, baby, anytime you need them. So tell me, baby, what you say? You better show me what to do about it. Oh baby, I'm walking. Don't got time for talking, 'cause I'm not gonna cry for no one, 'cause nobody deserves my tears, yeah. But if you really wanna, we can rendezvous. Do you wanna come through? Sliding like your old guitar. Baby, I'm all for the thrill. Let's run away. In your vintage car, baby, I won't say this twice. I need your sweet gift tonight, the rendezvous. I know it's kind of reckless, but I love it. I can't help it, I just wanna give my mind a break. And you've got quite a history, a trail of broken hearts from the unsuspecting. But honey, I got tricks in me, just wait and see. Yours or mine for the rendezvous. Do you wanna come through? Sliding like your old guitar.
sliding like your old good time. Baby, I'm all for you. Let's run away from what's real to the rendezvous. You know what to do. Pull up in your vintage car. Baby, I won't say this twice.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.